Not John Lennon, I said.
People usually stick with their own first name. I don't know why, but they usually do. So you were Paul Lennon. Tuesday, you were Paul McCartney. Wednesday, you were Paul Harrison. Thursday, you were Paul Starr. Friday in Augusta, you started over again with Paul Lennon, right?
Right, he said.
But there's a million hotels in Augusta. Conventions, golf. How the hell did you know where to look?
I thought about it, I said.
You got in Friday, late morning, coming in from the west. A guy like you walks back the way he's already seen. Feels safer that way. You'd been on the bus 4 hours, you were cramped up, you wanted the air, so you walked a spell, maybe a quarter mile. Then you got panicky and dived off the main drag a block or two. So I had a pretty small target area, 18 places. You were in number 15. He shook his head, mixed feelings. We barreled on down the road in the dark. The big old Bentley loped along, a hair over the legal limit.
How are things in Margrave now? He asked me.
That was the big question. He asked it tentatively, like he was nervous about it. I was nervous about answering it. I backed off the gas a little and slowed down, just in case he got so upset that he grabbed at me. I didn't want to wreck the car. Didn't have time for that.
We're in deep shit, I told him. We've got about 7 hours to fix it.
I saved the worst part for last. I told him Charlie and the kids had gone with an FBI agent back on Monday because of the danger. And then I told him the FBI agent had been Picard. There was silence in the car. I drove on 3-4 miles in the silence. It was more than a silence. It was a crushing vacuum of stillness, like all the atmosphere had been sucked off the planet. It was a silence that roared and buzzed in my ears. He started clenching and unclenching his hands, started rocking back and forth on the big leather chair beside me. But then he went quiet. His reaction never really got going, never really took hold. His brain just shut down and refused to react anymore, like a circuit breaker clicking open. It was too big and too awful to react to. He just looked at me.
Okay, he said. Then you'll have to get them back, won't you?
I sped up again, charged on toward Atlanta. I'll get them back, I said. But I'll need your help. That's why I picked you up first. He nodded again. He had crashed through the barrier. He had stopped worrying and started relaxing. He was up on that plateau where you just did whatever needed doing. I knew that place. I lived there. 20 miles out from Augusta, we saw flashing lights up ahead and guys waving danger flares. There was an accident on the other side of the divider. A truck had plowed into a parked sedan. A gaggle of other vehicles were slewed all over the place. There were drifts of what looked like litter lying around. A big crowd of people was milling about, collecting it up. We crawled past in a slow line of traffic. Hubble watched out the window.
I'm very sorry about your brother, he said. I had no idea. I guess I got him killed, didn't I?
He slumped down in the seat, but I wanted to keep him talking. He had to stay on the ball. So I asked him the question I'd been waiting a week to ask.
How the hell did you get into all this? I said.
He shrugged, blew a big sigh at the windshield, like it was impossible to imagine any way of getting into it, like it was impossible to imagine any way of staying out of it.
I lost my job, he said. A simple statement.
I was devastated. I felt angry and upset, and scared, Reacher. We'd been living a dream, you know, a golden dream. It was a perfect, idyllic life. I was earning a fortune, and I was spending a fortune. It was totally fabulous. But then I started hearing things. The retail operation was under threat. My department was under review. I suddenly realized I was just one paycheck away from disaster. And the department got shut down. I got canned. and the paycheck stopped. And, I said. I was out of my head, he said. I was so angry. I had worked my butt off for those bastards. I was good at my job. I had made them a fortune. And they just slung me out like suddenly I was shit on their shoe. And I was scared. I was going to lose it all, right? And I was tired. I couldn't start again at the bottom of something else. I was too old, and I had no energy. I just didn't know what to do. And then Kleiner turned up, I said. He nodded, looked pale. He had heard about it, he said. I guess Teal told him. Teal knows everything about everybody. Kleiner called me within a couple of days. I hadn't even told Charlie at that point. I couldn't face it. He called me and asked me to meet him up at the airport. He was in a private jet on his way back from Venezuela. He flew me out to the Bahamas for lunch and we talked. I was flattered, to be honest. And, I said. He gave me a lot of crap, Hubble said. He was telling me to look at it as an opportunity to get out. He was saying I should dump the corporate thing. I should come and do a real job, make some real money with him. I didn't know much about him. I knew about the family fortune and the foundation, obviously, but I'd never met him face to face. But he was clearly a very rich and successful guy. And very, very smart. And there he was, sitting in a private jet, asking me to work with him. Not for him, with him. I was flattered, and I was desperate, and I was worried, and I said yes. And then, I said. He called me again the next day, Hubble said. He was sending the plane for me. I had to fly down to the Kleiner plant in Venezuela to meet with him. So I did. I was only there one day, didn't get to see anything. Then he flew me to Jacksonville. I was in the lawyer's office for a week. After that, it was too late. I couldn't get out. Why not? I asked him. It was a hell of a week, he said. Sounds like a short time, right? Just a week. But he did a real job on me. First day, it was all flattery, all temptation. He signed me up to a huge salary, bonuses, whatever I wanted. We went to clubs and hotels, and he was spending money like it was out of a faucet. Tuesday, I started work. The actual job was a challenge. It was very difficult after what I'd been doing at the bank. It was so specialized. He wanted cash, of course, but he wanted dollars only. Nothing but singles. I had no idea why. And he wanted records. Very tight books. But I could handle it. And he was a relaxed boss. No pressures, no problems. The problems started Wednesday. How? I said. Wednesday, I asked him what was going on, he said. And he told me. He just told me exactly what he was doing. But he said, now I was doing it too. I was involved. I had to stay quiet. Thursday, I was getting really unhappy. I couldn't believe it. I told him I wanted out. So he drove me down to some awful place. His son was there. He had two Hispanic guys there with him. There was this other guy chained up in a back room. Kleiner said this was a guy who had stepped out of line. He told me to watch carefully. His son just kicked the guy to a pulp all over the room, right in front of me. Then the Hispanic guys got their knives out and just hacked the poor guy apart. There was blood everywhere. It was horrible. I couldn't believe it. I threw up all over the place. Go on, I said. It was a nightmare, Hubble said. I couldn't sleep that night. I thought I'd never sleep again, any night. Friday morning, we flew home. We sat together on that little jet, and he told me what would happen. He said it wouldn't be just me who got cut up. It would be Charlie, too. He was discussing it with me. Which of her nipples would he slice off first, left or right? Then, after we were dead, which of the children would he start with, Lucy or Ben? It was a nightmare. He said they'd nail me to the wall. I was shitting myself. Then we landed, and he called Charlie and insisted we go to dinner with him. He told her we were doing business together. Charlie was delighted because Klanner is such a big deal in the county. It was a total nightmare because I had to pretend there was nothing wrong. I hadn't even told Charlie I'd lost my job. I had to pretend I was still at the bank. And the whole evening that bastard was asking politely after Charlie and the children, smiling at me. We went quiet. I skirted around the southeast corner of Atlanta again, looking for the highway south. The big city glowed and glittered on the right. To the left was the dark, empty mass of the rural southeast. I found the highway and accelerated south, down toward one little dot in that dark, empty mass. "Then what?" I asked him. "I started work at the warehouse," he said. "That's where he wanted me." "Doing what?" I said. "Managing the supply," he said. "I had a little office in there, and I had to arrange to get the dollars, and then I'd supervise the loading and shipping." "Sherman Stoller was the driver?" I asked him. "Right," he said. "He was trusted to do the Florida run. I'd send him out with $1 million bills a week. Sometimes the gate men did it if Sherman had a day off, but it was usually him. He helped me with the boxes and the loading. We had to work like crazy. $1 million in singles is a hell of a sight. You've got no idea. It was like trying to empty a swimming pool with a shovel." "But Sherman was stealing, right?" I said. He nodded. I saw the flash of his steel glasses in the glow from the dash. "The money got counted properly in Venezuela," he said. "I used to get accurate totals back after about a month or so. I used them to cross-check my weighing formula. Many times we were about $100,000 down. No way had I made that kind of mistake. It was a trivial amount because we were generating $4 billion in excellent fakes at the other end, so who cared? But it was about a boxful every time. That would be a large margin of error. So I figured Sherman was stealing the occasional box." "And?" I said. "I warned him off," Hubble said. "I mean, I wasn't going to tell anybody about it. I just told him to take care, because Klanner would kill him if he found out. Might get me into trouble as well. I was already worried enough about what I was doing. The whole thing was insane. Klanner was importing a lot of the fakes. He couldn't resist it. I thought it made the whole thing way too visible. Teal was spending the fakes like confetti, prettying up the town." "And what about the last 12 months? I asked him. He shrugged and shook his head. "We had to stop the shipping," he said. "The Coast Guard thing made it impossible. Klanner decided to stockpile instead. He figured the interdiction couldn't last. He knew the Coast Guard budget wouldn't stand it for long. But it just lasted and lasted. It was a hell of a year. The tension was awful. And now the Coast Guard's finally pulling back. It's caught us by surprise. Klanner figured it's lasted this long, it would last until after the election in November. We're not ready to ship. Not ready at all. It's all just piled up in there. It's not boxed yet." "When did you contact Joe?" I asked him. "Joe?" he said. "Was that your brother's name?" "I knew him as Polo." I nodded.